Hey, Owen, here we go. It is episode 107 of We Talk Comics. Episode number one, History of the DC Universe 3.1. Is that enough numbers? That's as many numbers as I can put in a title.
You could do a few more.
History of the New 52 3.1. I could have gotten two more digits in there. That's what we're calling it then. That's one of the first retcons of the New 52 right there, is the title of this episode. New 52 is a retcon of, it's a retcon of everything, so we're retconning the title 1 minute into the episode. I am Keith. I am hosting this week. This is a New 52 retrospective. So the hosts this week will be, you weren't a founding host, Chris.
No. Although I came on one episode before you did.
Oh, that's right.
As a guest.
So as a host, you do have,
I have seniority. Yes. I was on episode 2.
I think it was episode 3, possibly 4, that I made it. I did a guest spot on either episode 3 or 4, and I refused to be called a host, for about 2 more episodes. I just wanted to be a guest because I didn't want to make a commitment. Like most people didn't want to make a commitment to Mo.
And now look at you. Now look at you. You're the superior Mo.
Now the superior Mo. And we are joined by extra special super guest, Cousin Oliver, Matt. Matt Centauri Griffith, say hello.
Hello, everyone. I'm very excited to talk about the New 52. As everyone knows, I'm a big, big fan.
I could not imagine doing a New 52 retrospective without having Matt on the show. There was no way.
Damn right.
And I want to set out the parameters of this right away. We're not doing any news this week, unless we'll get the stuff at the very end of the episode. We'll likely get into a little bit of news since a lot of the post Forever Evil stuff is starting to get announced. We're going to talk about the New 52 from relaunch to today, focusing on the stories of the New 52, focusing on some of the things they tried that worked, what didn't work, why they might have made certain choices. What we're not going to talk about is the business of it. Though this is a sausage fest, we will not be talking about how sausages are made. We want to focus on the stories of the New 52, which I don't think enough people do. So I want to kick this off with, we're going to go one step back from the launch of the New 52 in September 2011 to the summer of 2011. Hit shows included probably Game of Thrones. It was 3 years ago. I mean, come on. Walking Dead and Game of Thrones. World. People communicated using Twitter. Katy Perry was at the top of the charts. We knew around middle of 2011 that there was going to be a relaunch of DC in coming in September, and it was a slow process to see how rebooty that relaunch was going to be. How much continuity were they going to reset, and how much was going to be just tweaking, and how much of it was just, the way we see now with new creators, new directions, but maintaining old continuity. What were you thinking ahead of the relaunch? What was your feeling? We'll start with you, Matt.
Well, I remember where I was the day I heard the New 52 news. Now, I was actually in North Dakota. So you can imagine visiting my in-laws. I was very, very, very excited about the news because it meant I could be on my computer all day and figure stuff out. But it became very obvious right away that it was going to be a pretty radical relaunch because of the lineup of the Justice League. So it wasn't just that they were pulling these 7 characters together, but that these were the new original 7. Of course, one of the things that immediately caught my eye was that Barbara Gordon was back in the Batgirl suit. And I do remember not being real sure whether, you know, that meant post Oracle, instead of Oracle, what it actually meant. So there was still quite a bit of, unsureness, as in that regard, but yeah, it seemed pretty much like a fresh start. And that was pretty exciting for me, quite honestly. I'm a 32-year collector of DC Comics. So I've seen quite a few of these restarts, or, you know, one really only major one, but and not even to this degree. Crisis on Infinite Earths didn't start every book over at number one. It didn't start quite a few, but not everyone. And I just thought it was a really awesome opportunity to get a fresh start, particularly since I hadn't been reading as many or as excited about as many DC books at the time.
And Chris, you were probably getting quite a few DC books.
Yeah. Actually, I was collecting more before than after. And if you go back to episode 2, I completely dismiss everything they're doing in the New 52. I did not think it would last. I think my reaction was, boy, I can't wait to the crisis that that brings everything back to the way it was. I gave it a year at most. I did not think this would work. I did not think they were serious about this. And boy, was I wrong.
And I was, I had a lot of trepidation because I had been away from DC since the late 90s. I like almost half the time reading comics, I wasn't reading DC, even though at one point I was getting, you know, 2/3 of the line in the mid, like the early 90s. I had gotten back into DC. I had borrowed and begged to get all kinds of books to fill in that gap and learn what had happened, because the Justice League Generation Lost book was coming out, which had the original Justice League International in it. And I heard there was going to be a new Justice League International, and I wanted to catch up in time to be on board when that started. So I was excited about Justice League International, but as we got further down the road, I was pretty down on it. And I was pretty down on it until, you know, I started seeing issues, until I realized that, I mean, they were actually targeting me. They were targeting lapsed readers, and that's when I started getting excited about it. Was when I actually, you know, started in those first couple of weeks of issues.
Yeah, one of the things I remember thinking most is, why are they doing this? Green Lantern at the time had a bunch of titles. They were all going great guns. Batman wasn't particularly strong, but I thought it was on the upswing. They had all the talent. I didn't really think, like, why are they doing this? But I think in the end it was just to be number one ahead of Marvel, and it worked, and they've been there ever since.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that seemed really attractive to me right away was that it would force the universe to get a little simpler. You know, it's funny because the final issue of Teen Titans before the relaunch has this gorgeous Phil Jimenez cover that I bought the issue just to get that cover, but it has every Teen Titan ever on the cover. And there are literally like 120 Teen Titans. And the Justice League had almost just as many members over time, so many that I used to be able to name them all in order, and I started like messing up. And I'm, you know, I have every issue of Justice League ever produced. So, you know, it starts to get a little overwhelming, even for someone who's that into the universe. Never mind, you know, how many different legions there have been, how many different versions of Hawkman, how many different versions of all kinds of characters. So it really felt like this unique opportunity to start something new. You know, there's a lot of books that I love that are no longer part of the New 52. or that the history within the New 52. Like, I love New Teen Titans, but I also looked back at that almost immediately and thought, well, frankly, no one has written the New Teen Titans as well as they were written when they first came out, and lots of people have tried. So why not try something new? Because I'm never going to recapture that again. So that was sort of the open mind I went into it with, and I think in some ways I've been rewarded. Not in every instance, and maybe not in Teen Titans yet, but in a lot of ways, certainly.
Well, let's get into we had the big there was a big Flashpoint event, which we'll skip over when we do our retrospective of post-crisis DC, covering the 25 years of post-crisis continuity. We'll end at Flashpoint. The episodes will fit together seamlessly.
Right.
So September 2011, we get 52 number ones. That's really where We Talk Comics kicked off, actually. It was when we solidified the four hosts, and we read all 52, which was insane.
I remember that episode.
It was not the Baton Death March that doing the 52 number zeros was. We had brand new books. We, of course, had the Wildstorm books that were being integrated. We had the Vertigo books that were being integrated. We had a lot of familiar faces. But the two of the big lines, Green Lantern and Batman, didn't significantly reboot. I mean, Green Lantern basically picked up the next issue from where it had been. It was the least affected by the New 52. And Batman, it quickly laid out, certainly there were some notable characters that were no longer included in the backstory. And there were changes to Tim Drake, for example, but predominantly most of the things that we knew about Batman, at least at first, were the same as they had been.
Sure.
I mean, certainly Zero Year has now shown more of what they've changed kind of retroactively. That first year or so, a year and a half of Batman Adventures, you didn't need any background. So there was no reason to know whether it was rebooted or not, which was part of the point. It was supposed go ahead.
There were a few notable connections. It was very clear from the first issue of Nightwing that Dick Grayson had been Batman. So that carried over really well. It had been clear also, of course, from the Court of Owls story that everything from Scott Snyder's Gates of Gotham miniseries had carried over as well. And that was pre New 52. So yeah, there was a real sense, of course, Batman Inc., which eventually joined the New 52 as well. There was a real sense, I think, Batman that had the most continuity going forward. But, there's a reason for that. It was selling the best before. All the books that sold well pretty much continued on. All the ones that didn't pretty much didn't. Except for Legion of Superheroes.
Go ahead, Chris.
Nope, I was coughing. I just was reaching for my button.
Oh, good. I enjoyed your thoughts then. there was a bit of if the trade paperback hadn't come out yet, it might still be in continuity because they need to sell that book. maybe that is still in continuity. It's $35. Yeah, it was interesting as he kind of pieced a bit of that together early on, and it was interesting that that was a bit of a game, for the first 6 months or so, and then it really died off quickly. Like, I mean, you publish 52 books a year. I mean, when we did the history of the DC universe for Comicosity, there were 1,000 books, there were 1,000 comics that went into that list in a year, 13 months. Just over 1,000 comics. By the time that 6 months or a year passed, so much new continuity was around that, you didn't have to be referring back to anything. You had new backstory.
Right.
And actually, I found some of the first stories, the Justice League, for example, when the characters are meeting for the first time. I just went back and watched the Justice League War animated movie. That those first meetings were really awkward. We already knew these characters knew each other, and I never bought that they didn't have a previous relationship. I think to get through that first year, I personally had to ignore, just fill in some of the blanks for myself from previous continuity of what had happened and where these characters met up. I found that whole Green Lantern, Batman, not knowing each other thing really just really awkward.
It was really interesting. That first year of Justice League in particular was not so awesome. The first six issues, of course, were the 5 years ago or 6 years ago or whatever it was. And that was pretty awkward and slow. You know, the second six issues started to pick up a little better, but I'll be honest, Justice League did not really click for me until issue number 12, when all of a sudden you started to realize just how different the New 52 was going to be from the previous continuity. And that was essentially when Superman and Wonder Woman kissed for the first time. There was a pretty, you know, milestone moment for the continuity, and really signaled to me that the Justice League was the center of this sort of new mythology. And I do have this sort of theory, and I don't know if we want to talk about this now or later, but, you know, sort of like the X-Files, for those who are X-Files fans, had the mythology issues or episodes, and then just had the usual like one-off stories. And I kind of think of the New 52 that way as well. There are the mythology books, and then there are the books that are sort of all on their own. So, you know, all on their own, you have Wonder Woman, you have Batman, you have, Green Lantern now to a certain extent. All of these books, you know, sort of telling their own story in their own sort of not discrete universe, but they don't necessarily have to interact with the entire universe to make sense.
It reminds me very much, you know, Bob Harris is, of course, top guy, is one of the top people at DC now. It reminds me of when he was at Marvel and they were really factioned off, that the Spider-Man books would do stuff within the Spider-Man books, the X-Universe within the X-Universe. And it was actually quite rare for a while that you would kind of cross over into each other's worlds.
Well, now it's the complete opposite of Marvel.
It's, yeah, absolutely the opposite of Marvel, but that's kind of where DC's at, is that they are a bit siloed, and it kind of works. I think that stuff works, though, because particularly like Green Lantern's a great example. They're building something, but they're building something like quite within those four to six books, whatever it is right now.
Yeah.
But I have a problem with the way they were siloed in that first year. Everything with within the Wildstorm stuff they were bringing in, everything leading into the Hell on Earth, or what was supposed to be the Hell on Earth crossover, really hurt when they started losing books and nobody was reading Grifter or Voodoo. I think we're still hurting from that today. They had sort of planned an infrastructure that included the I really think that has repercussions today. There's this whole side of the DC universe that they sort of set out to explore and then cut it short.
I actually marked this on my show notes as a failure to launch. Let's take a vote. We have three of us. Demonites or Daemonites?
Daemonites, because Demon Knights is the other title.
So
Daemon Knights.
So the Daemonite. Okay, and I love it. The Daemonites. So the Wildstorm characters were integrated in the New 52 at the same time as the Vertigo characters,
which were much more successful.
Absolutely,
but there's a reason.
and Matt will have a reason in just a second. Hold on to it, because I know you have one, and I want to make sure you get it in. So for those who don't know, the Daemonites storyline. The Daemonites are the alien bad guys from the Wildstorm universe. They were the big bad in Wildcats specifically, but kind of throughout the books. Voodoo was half Daemonite, I want to say. So they were very much in the mythology of the Wildstorm universe. They were establishing very early on, starting from issue number one of Superman, as well as Voodoo and Grifter, a big Daemonites event that would happen within the first about a year and a half. They never put any kind of numbers to it. And that very much ate up the first six issues of Superman, kind of weighed those issues down because they're trying really hard to build that stuff into what was going on in Superman. Those were the Perez issues. And then you had Grifter and you had Voodoo. And then I assume that this would have eventually, you know, gone out into Stormwatch, the other ones, depending on how, it was like they were building a Wildstorm specific event that would solidify those characters within, DC, but it just didn't work. And like Chris said, the remainder of it, the bit that they had established just played itself out on how, I think it was the Superman Annual that he fought the Hellspawn, and then bits of it were in Hell on Earth. But primarily, it had basically blown itself out by the end of the first year without a really amounting to anything. Matt, I know you have a theory why the Wildstorm, the attempt to integrate Wildstorm did not work.
Well, I have two theories about why Wildstorm's didn't really work integrated into the DC universe. One of them is probably true. One is that the DC universe itself rejected Wildstorm, like a transplant that just wasn't a good match. These characters were created as a reaction, in fact, to DC and Marvel by creators that, yes, are at DC now, for the most part, but as its own universe, its own discrete rules, no big superheroes, everyone is a little grittier. But when you take the superheroes that exist as, you know, the core mythology, and you try to bring in these guys that they just become also-rans. And the universe doesn't want that. And so, like, you know, thinking of the DC universe as this living, breathing thing, it just wasn't going to take. The other thing is that people don't want to read those characters, and so they didn't sell, and so DC cut their losses.
I was desperate for a Grifter book.
Chris was the one at the store every week going, is there a new Grifter book yet?
I love Grifter. I thought he was the natural fit. And I'll take him. I will disagree with you on that point, because other characters like Deathstroke, they haven't found a good place for. He got a book, it bombed. Team 7, gone. I don't know. As well as what the Blackhawks book, they haven't been able to do anything with their military type non-powered or lower powered characters. The only group they've been able to have successfully function in the New 52 is Suicide Squad. And since that's relaunching, you might want to, you might want to argue that has failed as well.
I think the reason it's relaunching is because it didn't do as well as it could. But it did okay enough to warrant a relaunch. You know, I hate to say this, Chris, but none of those books have a history of success at DC except for Deathstroke. And Deathstroke, I actually believe, was a very well-written book until they changed the creative team.
Absolutely agree.
And then by the time they got someone back on it that could have done it good, I think it was just too late. You know, and I also think that Deathstroke is a tough character. I personally like him as a villain. I don't want to read him as a hero or even an anti-hero. That's just not what I want.
I've always
said that Black Hawks didn't work. I mean, Black Hawks has never worked. It hasn't worked since the 60s. So that's not really a big surprise. It was nice they took a chance. But it's sort of like saying, well, the war books don't work. I'm like, well, because people don't want to buy war books. I mean, it's just...
I've always believed that Marvel does the shades of gray much better than DC always... the darker DC gets, the harder it is to sell, which is surprising since DC's main title is Batman, but Batman's always good, I guess. I guess that's not, absolutes work better at DC.
I think that's true.
Just my opinion.
Well, and I think the Wildstorm characters aren't built on absolutes. So that's, you know, that really is that. I think that sort of goes along with my theory. You know, I do think of all of those, Grifter has the best chance. And it did run a little bit longer. But I think they just needed to maybe position him a little bit better, which they seem like they're going to be doing going forward, but we'll probably talk about that later. A lot of these characters, in fact. But, you know, the reason why I alluded to saying that the dark characters or the Vertigo characters had a much easier time being integrated into the DC universe because they were all part of the DC universe to begin with. They went away and are now coming back. None of them were created at Vertigo. They all were created originally as DC characters. It's just that perhaps their most famous or most successful versions all went off to Vertigo. And I think that was one of the interesting things, is that they brought all of those versions over, as opposed to like reverting to, I don't know, cheesy Animal Man or...
Yeah, Animal Man's a good example, because certainly the new 52 version is much, much closer to what Morrison did. And then Delano after.
Really more Delano, yeah.
Yeah, but Matt and I have had this discussion before about which version is closer. I think we have an Animal Man Volume 8 on the block if we can ever come up with a solve to the bet of if it is closer to Morrison than Delano's.
We need a Doom Patrol. Sorry.
I'm with you on that. The certainly, closer it would be to Morrison's version, the happier I'd be.
And they had already reintegrated Animal Man in quite a while before with 52 way back when, but they didn't use anything that felt even really like Morrison's version. They really went back to the well with the Bronze Age Forgotten Heroes version of the character and didn't really very little. There was no feel of even the Morrison stuff when they brought that character back into the main DC universe.
Tying them all together with Rot World, I thought was a genius move, because none of those books could, I don't think any of them would have survived if they all went it alone. I think really you grabbed you all of a sudden had everybody who likes that kind of thing grabbing all the books.
Well, let's look at, while we're still in year one here, along with the Damonite story that didn't fly, we had the first six books to be canceled. Now you can say what you want about canceled books. The simple fact is that they don't. If a book doesn't sell, it's going to go. And if it doesn't live up to its potential, which I think is where Suicide Squad's at right now. I mean, Suicide Squad is there was an episode of Arrow a couple of weeks called Suicide Squad. And the book isn't selling what it could be.
Right.
That's why they're relaunching. It's, you know, it's living up to potential. So the first six books gone were Men of War, as Matt said, no one buys war books. Hawk and Dove, really bad creative team.
You can't blame the creative team. It was terrible. But, I mean, it's Hawk and Dove. I would have canceled it before issue one. That sucker should have never got off the ground.
I'll tell you, as far as the creative team goes, I do have to make a stipulation. I can tell you the exact page that Sterling Gates stopped writing and Rob Liefeld started. And Sterling even confirmed it for me. Like, I could literally tell as I was reading what page the changeover happened, because I enjoyed the book until that, literally that page. It was unbelievable. Because I don't, like, I'm not a super Rob Liefeld hater as far as the art. I'm not a lover, but I'm not a hater. And I actually really like Hawk and Dove as characters. But yeah, that when Sterling was removed, in all likelihood, it was gone. They may as well have canceled it, like, after those three pages in issue 5 or whatever, and just sold those three pages. So, yeah, what were the other books?
Omac,
which I loved.
I know Chris was a big fan of Omac as well. Mr. Terrific, Blackhawks, and Static Shock. Blackhawks was, as I recall, Blackhawks was the worst reviewed book out of all 52 in our first month. We actually still continue to make jokes about how ludicrous that first issue was.
It was pretty bad. I really hated Mr. Terrific too.
The character and I wanted to like the book, but it just didn't work.
Yeah. It is interesting looking at this list. Which ones have found a place somewhere in the New 52 and which ones have not. And Mr. Terrific has gotten rolled into he was rolled into World's Finest and then in Earth 2. OMAC, of course, continues to pop up and will be a focus of events going forward. The Blackhawks have become even better at being a secret organization because no one has heard of them since issue 8 of Blackhawks.
Yeah, and Hawk and Dove totally gone as well.
Yeah, Hawk and Dove just vanished. I can't even remember which. Men of War was Sergeant Rock, and what was the other storyline in it? I keep getting it mixed up with G.I. Combat, which was...
Yeah. I want to say Haunted Tank, but no.
No, that was G.I. Combat as well.
Was Unknown Soldier?
No, Unknown Soldier was also G.I. Combat. The good ones were all G.I. Combat.
The one? It wasn't a double book. G.I. Combat was a double book.
I don't remember.
Maybe it was Unknown Soldier. Haunted Tank, Unknown Soldier, and War of the Time Forgot were all G.I. Combat. So I can't remember what the other half of that book was. Anyway, Sergeant Rock's re-upped in Afghanistan. Never seen or heard from him again. Possibly working with Static Shock now also not turned up. The Milestone characters, I think, had already been integrated into DC, right?
Yes.
So
yes, because Static had been a member of the Teen Titans before the
Changer. Okay. Yeah, and those were, and as you were talking about what the DC universe as a thing will accept, I mean, DC has a long history of absorbing other properties, other lines, but the Milestone characters didn't really integrate any better than Wildstorm did.
A little better, but not hugely better. I think Static integrated really well. Icon did not. I'm trying to think who else. Yeah, Static was probably the standout.
Almost all these universes have a riff on Superman, and none of those characters ever work.
Right, like Majestic, awful.
Yeah. Yeah, once you integrate them into the DC, they just don't work because they're all a riff on a character that's already there. Captain Marvel being, the one exception.
Right. But, the plan, obviously, with Captain Marvel, or now known as Shazam, in the New 52, was to make him as different from Superman as possible, and it clearly worked. Because fans are clamoring for a series, and have been for months and months and months.
Now, with those six gone, we got six new books. At least two of them are still on the shelves. So the wave two was Earth 2, World's Finest, Batman Inc., Dial H, The Ravagers, and G.I. Combat. Now we can all agree that World's Finest was the best out of that wave, right? or possibly Earth 2?
I think possibly Earth 2.
My personal thing, I thought Dial H was a phenomenal series no one paid attention to.
I knew you were a fan of that one. I like GI Combat. I have the trade of that. There's some great stories in that.
And I think the problem with that one was it was a beautifully drawn flip book, so story was really hard to get across. I think it would read better on trade.
It does, absolutely, yeah. Now, I was really down on the idea of Earth 2 before it came out. And part of it was that I was, from all the previews I had seen, I was really concerned that what we were getting was, a Trinity Elseworlds book, which was not something I was into. And it turned out I was wrong. and that's okay. It certainly become one of my favorite books in the New 52. I've had some ups and downs the last few months, partly because all of a sudden it almost is is the Trinity book I was afraid of before it came out.
Right.
It's 2/3 of the way to a Trinity book, the likes of which was my concern before. But I mean, certainly for that first year or so it was running, my first read the week came out every time. And I think it's
so fine.
And I think that once it came out, that was the book that showed me exactly how far this new 52 idea could go. Just how new and fresh these ideas could be. Cause up till that, it was renovations. This was the first time at that to me that they were looking at it and saying, no, it can be absolutely new. They don't have to be the Justice Society ever. They don't have to develop into familiar characters. They can just be this fresh and different from page one.
Well, and I'll say that those people who are still really enjoying that book have come to, I want to say go with the flow, but have come to accept the book for what it is. And not focused as much as what they expected it to be or what it should be in their mind. This is, again, like you say, this is clearly not a world where the Justice Society is a foregone conclusion. We're not going to, a year from now, have all the characters in their 60s with grown children. Like, it's just not going to happen. And so even with the shifting cast or shifting focus, which I don't think is necessarily a permanent shift, but simply a storyline shift. It's just storylines are longer than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that the potential is very different. And clearly there's something very major being set up that involves both Earth 2 and the rest of the New 52. I suspect it's the October weekly series, actually. But, you know, that book really was something I was really looking forward to, and I was really not disappointed. And I was even surprised by the contents of the first issue, which my husband still thinks is ludicrous. it's like, you knew that's what was going to happen. I'm like, oh, but I didn't remember. I think showed a huge amount of potential for what this universe could do. And that was, again, it was month 9. So it was right before the events of Justice League number 12. So a lot of things were happening at the end of that first year that started to signal a lot of potential for what the new 52 could be.
There's one last thing I want to talk about before we move on to that end of the first year, because I think Matt's already mentioned what is kind of the turning point for the new 52 at the end of the first year. We only had one major event for that year. That was one of the promises, is that they were gonna keep events on the side for a while and really set up and like let books breathe a bit for a while. And the only event we got in that first year was Night of the Apples. Court of the Owls was the huge success coming out of the new 52. I mean, Snyder and Capullo's book was a top book to start, and the distance between it and the rest of the Batman books just grew month by month, you know, sales wise. And they also, but Night of the Owls also set the way that they're going to do events. Forever of Evil being the exception to this, but the way they've done all the events up till now, where Batman has a core book, and you can jump, you can get in or get off. So, Night of the Owls, you have the core book. You could read only the core book, but all the other Batman family books could opt in to the event, and all but Batwoman did. Matt, do you think that model's still working?
I'm not. Well, yes, in a way. Because Batman just did it with Zero Year. So we just saw it a few months ago, I think with the issue 25s, where not just the Batman core titles, it was titles sprinkled throughout all the lines would tie in. How successful I think that was? It was greatly successful if all you wanted to do was read Batman. Because it was great. You didn't have to read any of those other books. I think that very few of them told a story that was as compelling as their regular stories. I think Batgirl was a real exception early on. I think there were a few highlights. I think the Batman and Robin one people liked a lot.
That was actually one of the ones that hooked me on Batman and Robin.
Yeah. But it also derailed a few books pretty significantly.
Red Hood. Red Hood was a train wreck. I never returned to the book after that.
Birds of Prey. I collected the first 8 issues, and after issue 9, I pretty much fell off. I still got it for a while, but those ended up in the recycle bin after issue 8 because it just sort of went off the rails. I'm not sure why that is. I don't know if it's because the writers, again, were told, had the option. They could opt in or not. Again, like Batwoman chose not to. And I think it ended up faring a little bit better, despite the second story troubles that book had. But we did see that a couple times since, but primarily just in the Batman and the Green Lantern universes. Green Lantern was a little bit different, though. You kind of had to read all of the issues, sort of. I've been experimenting a little bit with that over time, and I'm finding more and more these days, especially with DC, that if I don't want to read, or if I'm not collecting another book and I just don't buy it, that I actually turn out okay. I kind of wish I had made that choice with the Earth 2 World's Finest, or sorry, the Batman Superman World's Finest crossover, because the World's Finest issues were so bad, and the Batman Superman ones were so good.
You still haven't seen the middle of that story, though, have we?
No, but I'm trusting that it's very, very good.
It'll be excellent. Yeah.
The first part was a 10 out of 10, as far as I'm concerned. So I liked that they weren't really forcing you to buy issues that you didn't have to. And again, I think the Zero Year really played that out really well, because none of those comics necessarily even included Batman.
Mm-hmm.
They were just set at that time. So I read Flash, thought that was really great. Action was, Greg Pak's first issue. That one was incredible. You could read it as a reader of Action, and it was part of that story. You probably got more out of that than if you were a fan of Zero Year, because it's sort of only, remotely tied. But the books were actually quite well written across the board. So maybe there were some lessons learned from that initial Night of the Owls crossover.
Yeah, and that's actually what I did on Zero Year as well. I took your advice on that one, and I only read Action and Green Arrow, I think, were the only ones I ended up reading.
Those were the best, yeah.
Which were the only ones I would have read anyway.
Right.
I any new writer on, I've pretty much established that, and now that every new writer on Superman I will try, because I love Superman so much. I want to read, I want to read Superman that I really enjoy. And it's taken a while for me to find that, to hit on the right feel for that. I think what Pack's doing is what I want.
Yep. Yeah, I'm really, I'm curious to see what Johns brings to it. Of course, now we're talking about things that are
post- we're jumping around. Okay.
Act one.
So at the end of year one of the New 52, we're about to go into the zero issues. And two big events happen. One, just Matt had already mentioned, the kiss in Justice League number 12. And, you know, continues two years later to be controversial. The other one was an issue that, I'm going to be at, when I'm at the next, when I'm at the Calgary Comic Expo, I'm going to be looking for this issue in back issue bins for a buck. Because it's about to be an incredibly highly sought after issue. The Justice League International Annual, ending off a book that wasn't selling well, was underperforming. You know, this is one of the books that was, it wasn't selling what the normal cutoff would be for a book, but certainly with Justice League on the masthead, it should have been doing better. But this book tied into the kiss as well. And this book, it rolled in OMAC. It established that Batman had created Brother Eye, which had not been established in the New 52 yet. It established that Brother Eye was in someone else's control at this point.
Someone who we still don't know who.
It's still a mystery who is in control of Brother Eye. And we know that Brother Eye is about to turn back up. Booster Gold appears from a future version of Booster Gold appears and says that he needs to stop something from happening or it'll all go wrong. And what he was supposed to be stopping was the kiss. And Booster has a more militarized armored look and has an Argus emblem on his uniform. And then he vanishes into the time stream and has only been seen four times since. But there's a lot unpacked in that book. And I knew at the time that, you know, Juergens had written 1 through 12 of Justice League International, but then Geoff Johns and Dan DiDio wrote the Justice League International Annual, which was a sign right there that it was more happening here than just wrapping up a canceled book.
Right.
Now, have we seen the Argus logo before?
Yeah, it had been in the second arc of Justice League because Steve Trevor was a member of Argus.
Yeah, and it was a while before we saw it again. I think, would it be Vibe maybe was the next time that's...
Maybe.
So that wrapped up, and then we went into the 0 month issues, a couple more books ended at that time. Captain Atom, Resurrection Man, and Voodoo all ended in 0 month. We had more than 52 titles that month because we also launched Talon, Sword of Sorcery, and Phantom Stranger and Team 7 all launched out of 0 months. So there were 56 books that month, or 55 books out of that month.
And of those books, only Phantom Stranger still survives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Talon was the first book that spun off out of an event. The Sword of Sorcery was another attempt at just trying stuff. And I think that's one thing that I really continue to love about the New 52 is that it's editorially driven and it's about trying stuff. Marvel's editorial driven, but they've admitted that they're marketing driven right now. DC, it's editorial driven. Sword of Sorcery, the same, like, you know, you had two different war books that didn't work. So let's try, you know, Amethyst, and just throw things at the wall and see what works. I like that continues to be a feeling that the new 52 has, that they'll just, you know, experiment with books like, I mean, Dial H, is a book that, you know, would have been a Vertigo possibly, but wouldn't have been a DC book for, you know, many, many years.
Right.
Talon's still running, by the way. So.
Yeah, but it's I think its last issue is this month.
Oh, okay. Damn it. Down another book.
Sorry, but Talon is moving into Batman Eternal, so he will exist. Talon is actually also really important because he was, I believe, the first character with a title in the New 52 that was given a title in the New 52 that did not exist pre-New 52 in some form or another. So it's a brand new character, and there's only been a couple, I think, Talon, Pandora, The Movement. I think that might be it. I thought there was one more.
The Birds of Prey extra character. She was new.
Yeah, but no, I mean that actually was a title character for the books. I think those are the only title characters that were like completely brand new for the New 52 that got their own books. Because none of the ones in the initial launch were.
No, it's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, you're right. I'm struggling to think of a. What was the other book that came out with Movement? The Green Team.
Yeah, that was a pre.
Oh, that's right. It was an existing
one. It was a one issue or something back in the 60s. It counts.
Brother Geek still has a chance.
That's right.
I would buy Brother Power the Geek. I would. Think
let's Brother Power the Prez and Ragman. Just let's get a team book going.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I'm sorry. The fourth character who's getting his own title, although it's not self-titled, is G.I. Zombie, brand new.
The other thing we have coming out of the first year is what I've put down on the notes as the Superman problem. So, I mean, the Kiss has informed this character more than anything else that they've done in the New 52, but it still actually took a while for them to do anything with that. That was one of the curious things is that was so earth-shattering and big headlines, got people's attention, and then they didn't necessarily do anything with it for a little while. And it kind of took a couple more writers before, you know, really the launch of the Superman Wonder Woman book before they started really exploring what that meant. Superman, we had a couple things in the first year. One was that we changed Superman writers twice in 1 year. Action was being written by Grant Morrison, who had his own thing he wanted to do, and it wasn't connecting organically with what anyone else was doing. And the character was really feeling different from each book. Chris, were you following any of the Superman books at that time?
No, as you well know, I'm not a Superman fan at all. I read issues one, the first issues in, put them away.
Yeah, I read Action because I'm one of the big Grant Morrison fans. And I was not sure if there are bright spots in that run. I think the first couple issues are really fantastic. I think the one featuring President Superman, brilliant. The rest of them, confusing mess. And Superman wasn't much better. Not George's best work with or without editorial interference. It just felt very stilted and just not very Superman.
Yeah, and I think I only had maybe one issue in that first year that felt like... for want of a better term, and I wish there was a better term, felt like my Superman. And that was the first issue of the Jurgens run. And in that, unfortunately, we already spoke about the Damonites storyline, and Jurgens kind of had to pick up that thread and do something with it. It didn't quite mesh well. At what point do we... If you believe that Superman is working right now, what is the point at which it started working?
I would say Greg Pak on Action and Charles Soule on Superman Wonder Woman. That those are the points at which it started working for me, which was late.
It is quite late for that you know, for the flagship character. I mean, if Batman had stumbled for a year and a half, they would have been in bad shape.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 2 years in.
Yeah, I think I mean, Hell on Earth. I kept trying, as I said earlier. I try every time there's a new writer, because I want to read Superman, and so I tried a lot of new creative teams along the way there, and Hell on Earth I started and then I dropped it. Cy War I started and I dropped it, and yeah, it wasn't. I think I'm probably in the same spot. I'm not yet as sold on Pack Superman. It's getting there. I thought it was a good the one with story of Lana Lang I liked. But I think I think it was Superman Wonder Woman number one is where like it started working for me.
Yeah, and it felt like the same Superman in Justice League, but there was a lot more personal feeling to it, and a lot more space for those two characters. Not having to share the screen so much. But yeah, I really do feel that Action is the book that we've seen, Action by Greg Pak, where we've seen the humanity and sort of Superman again. Because I do feel like they had this feeling at the beginning of the New 52, let's make Superman sort of more alien, more outsider, except that Grant Morrison wasn't doing that. So let's make him this more alien. Well, nobody wants that. And so now how is everyone writing him? They're writing him much more personal, much more human. That's how Pak's writing him. That's how Sol is writing him. I'm assuming that's how Johns will write him.
Yeah. And it was interesting. They made such a big deal early on of Superman will be removed and aloof. And the whole point of Sol's book is that's who Wonder Woman is. Wonder Woman's the one that's distant from humanity and doesn't feel she needs to be connected. And he's like, well, no, that's why I have a secret identity. I have to be able to be in touch with that part. I think that's where it starts working for me. Cause the very removed Superman doesn't work for me. I can't relate to it at all.
So what about Wonder Woman? Chris, were you reading Wonder Woman at all?
I am. I'm caught up to Wonder Woman. I absolutely love Brian Azzaro's interpretation there. I don't know how she fits into the DC universe. Luckily, her own book stays in her own book. I actually love the fact that she's not made of clay anymore. I'm really digging. I'm really digging her interaction with her brother and sisters of the Pantheon. But it's a one book. It's self-contained. I don't like when she mixes with Steve Trevor, and I don't like when she mixes with Superman. I don't like her in the Justice League. I think we have to build this character before we integrate her, which is what they're doing. I really don't. I don't want to see her in a book that isn't without Wonder Woman on the title.
Well, I too love Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang's version of Wonder Woman. And I know there are a lot of people who really, really don't. I see it as the freshest take we've seen on Wonder Woman in a long time. A lot of other versions were very much like the versions before them. And I have some of those versions I love very, very much. But this is just so separate and such a risk that DC took that really, to me, creatively paid off. And I love that it's completely separate because I can just read that book and get this whole story that's sort of happening maybe a little bit before everything else in the DC universe. Not too far before, as we see in Superman Wonder Woman, but just a little bit before. I do like her in the other books as well. It's interesting because a lot of people have complained that the portrayal of her is very different in Justice League and Superman Wonder Woman than it is in Wonder Woman. And I don't see that at all. I see that her as the exact same character, but her context is different. The story is different. But she's, you know, to me, it's the same, like Batman is the same character in Batman as he is in Detective. You know, the story's not the same. The people around him aren't necessarily the same, but it is, there is a consistent vision for that character, I believe.
I'm also not a big fan of the silver. I'd like to change back to the gold, but
I love the silver.
I think that's more of a personal taste than anything else.
Yeah. No, to me it's, and to be honest, I don't like, I've never worn gold jewelry. I'm always a silver guy. So it is personal preference, but you know, artistically, I just love that red, white, and blue.
One of these days I will read that book.
You should. It's really awesome. And I'm going to cry real tears when Azarella's run ends.
That's probably when I can start, is when I know it's a complete run. I hate new monthlies.
Yeah, it'll be six trades for you.
All right. Well, in that second year, a few of things that are going on. We have, at this point, we do get into more events, though. We were saying, they stay fairly siloed. We have Rotworld that Chris had brought up, which is Swamp Thing, Animal Man, and the End of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Throne of Atlantis, which was Justice League and Aquaman. And Cywar, which is the Superman books. First time that they had all connected, and two much less success than the ones that I've just mentioned. And then the biggest event of the second year of the New 52, Death of the Family and Batman Requiem. And a surprising lack of connection between those two events. One coming right after the other, there was so much expectation that Death of the Family would end with someone's death. We're talking about old comics. And no one can ask us about spoilers on this. You knew what you're right. Getting into.
Alfred
did not die, nor was his hand cut off. There's a great tale from Wizard World Chicago the original plan for Death of the Family was to have Alfred's hand cut off, and thankfully that editorial interference you hear so many bad things about. Editorial stepped in and convinced Scott Snyder, who now thanks them for having convinced him to not do that. but we've got these two big Batman events that have, you know, they were really earth shattering for Batman. Death of the Family, the first big Joker event, the first time Joker had a proper event that took the character seriously. The last time that they did a big one was the probably Emperor Joker, which was, you know, a very different kind of take on the character than what we saw.
Right. And before that, I would probably say Death in the Family. Honestly, there wasn't, you know, funny for a character as popular as the Joker, doesn't have that many excellent stories. You really have to sort of dig quite a bit to get to his really momentous stories. So it'll be interesting to see what DC puts together for the 75th anniversary book.
It probably just reprints from the greatest Joker stories ever told with one story from Death of the Family thrown in.
Yeah, maybe.
Particularly if they're not going to include Killing Joke.
yeah, which they're not, as it turns out. But that's okay, because Killing Joke is available separately.
In many forms.
As well in the Alan Moore collection, which is an excellent little collection.
Sure. Yeah, the Batman's been really solid for the crossovers. Again, though, I think I know that Brett made this mistake of reading all of the Death of the Family crossover issues. I did not make that mistake. I simply read Batman and Batgirl. And what was interesting about Batgirl, and I think I said this in the review of the collection, is that the way that book was written, Death of the Family had an entirely different meaning. So it wasn't about the Joker and Batman's family, but it was about Barbara's own family. So I thought that was a really interesting play. Again, I have the collection on my shelf of the Joker stories, and they're not so great. Especially Teen Titans, not so great. Beautiful art, not a great story.
The backflips they had to do to get Jason Todd involved in that story for Red Hood was pretty rough. That one I did. Yeah. I read it and should not have. I'm not a huge Batgirl fan, but I did really enjoy that story because I am a huge what's Gordon's son? I just blanked.
James Jr.
James Jr. Thank you. And it's Jr. I am a big fan of James Jr. So that's why I read those issues. Yeah, that was it's a really tight story that is kind of happening parallel to to what's going on in the Batman book. And then we have Requiem. We have the death of Damian Wayne, the first major death in the New 52. Could eventually be the first major resurrection in the New 52. We've been pretty resurrection free, aside from Dr. Light, which was clearly intended the whole time.
Sure.
You know, I never really count those if they if they die and are resurrected within the same story. But Damian is the first one to croak in the New 52, and it's the first test of how serious they are about making Death count.
I would guess that they're going to make him an exception because it was only Grant Morrison that wanted him dead. The rest of the world wants him to live. But we'll see. We don't know.
Yeah, that was definitely a Grant Morrison curveball to everybody. No one expected him to die and then just dead. And there was something in the contract there. There had to be that he had complete control.
Well, that was his intention from the very beginning. But the world disagrees.
And I disagreed in an editorial that I wrote for Comicosity, which you can find on comicosity.com. I can't remember what I called it, the case to save Damian Wayne, something like that. My argument was if everything is so top-down editorial, why did they let this creator play out a story that was clearly going to derail all of the rest of the Batman books it's still today. The Batman and book continues to be playing out the repercussions of that event.
Right. Although what's interesting is that Pete Tomasi gave an interview today says that there are clues to what happens with what's called Robin Rises, which is out this summer, in the very first storyline in his Batman and Robin. So he too planned this from the very beginning. So interesting to see what that ends up resulting in.
If it's Pete Tomasi, I'm there. That's one thing to bring up at this point is, and I'm wondering if we're gonna make it to the end of year two by the time we have to wrap this episode. Pete Tomasi is really one of the great things that has come out of the New 52 for me is, I tried so many books sampled so many books. And I was one of the ones that hated the whole concept of Damian Wayne and had, just kind of flat out refused to read anything. And then trying these out, Pete Tomasi's Batman and Robin really rapidly became one of my favorite books in the New 52 and was the reason why I didn't want them to kill Damian is that I didn't want them to derail how good that book was. What storylines or what creators have been the joy for you of have you been exposed to new creators that you hadn't seen before?
I love the fact that I've discovered Kyle Higgins. He wrote Nightwing and is writing Talon, which I've just discovered has been canceled. Really solid stuff. I actually prefer him to his mentor, Scott Snyder. And I was glad to see a classic writer was as good as I remember him. I'm blanking. Red Lanterns.
Peter Milligan.
Peter Milligan. I always loved Peter Milligan. He left the scene for quite a while. But he returned with the new 52. I thought his Justice League Dark was strong. His Red Lanterns was strong. Everything he does, I really enjoy.
I'll say Kyle Higgins' Deathstroke was also great.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to getting that trade and pretending that there was never a ninth issue.
Right. Yeah, Kyle Higgins has been great. He's, you know, he's also coming in on Batman Eternal. So he'll be writing there as well. You know, I think with the new 52 really solidified for me that I only sort of knew before was just how awesome Jeff Lemire is. Everything that he's written, I've really ended up loving. And it grows with every book he picks up. I really love James Tynion IV, who also a student of Scott Snyder's, and he's really exploded, I think, in popularity and talent. Really exceptional writer.
Well, let's. I got two more things I want to hit in the second year here. One is the end of Geoff Johns' Green Lantern. They spent most of the second year in two crossovers that took up the entire line. The Rise of the Third Army and then Wrath of the First Lantern, speaking of titles with lots of numbers in them. I will admit I tried the first issue of each one and felt like after 6 months of reading 3 out of 4 Lantern books that I kind of just needed a break. So I've not returned, even though you know, one of my favorite DC writers, one of my favorite writers, Charles Soule, is doing Red Lanterns. I still haven't ventured back.
Well, that's interesting because I actually read Red Lanterns now. It's the only Green Lantern title I read on a regular basis.
Oh, wow.
Not counting any Larfleas. I really, really like it. I think it reads well totally on its own. In fact, it's not included in the next Green Lantern crossover. Uprising is only between Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, which I was very surprised by. But yeah, Red Lanterns has been fantastic. Plus, they gave Guy Gardner a handlebar mustache. So that pretty much sells it for me. You know, I made a really distinct decision that with all those Green Lantern books, I was only going to buy Green Lantern. I was only going to buy the one title. I was not going to suffer the other books in crossovers, and I did just fine. I didn't feel like I was missing anything.
When I was reading 3 out of 4, because that was the point at which I started taking your sound advice, because there was no way that I could justify reading New Guardians. But I was actually getting 3 of the 4 books already. Tomasi was writing Core at the time. Reading 3 out of the 4, you know, you read 7, 8, and 10, like chapters 7, 8, and 10 or whatever it would be numbered at. And it was fine. You know, they have to do the little catch you up bit each issue anyway. So, and it very rarely felt like there was any. The one derailed spot was the when it all led into an annual, which if you didn't know that that's where it was leading, it would be just. I know there was a lot of people that were trying the read only the book you read, not knowing that I think was the Green Lantern Corps annual wrapped up the Third Army story.
Yeah.
So that one you were kind of stuck with that one, but. I mean, overall, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the way that Johns ended his run. It all kind of came to such a tidy conclusion that I think that's why I haven't ventured back is that it did wrap up so tightly. As they say, every jump on point's a jump off point. And it's not that I didn't like any of the ones because I did try the first issue of those 3 books the next month. Thought they were okay, but you know, a bit of Lantern fatigue, I think.
Sure.
Go ahead.
It's been pretty good. I would recommend it to anyone.
I'll take a look at
it. It's a very different take.
I'll have to try the Red Lanterns again. because as I said, Charles Soule is one of my favorite writers.
Three different writers on that book, all with different takes. I like them all. The Red Lanterns is my favorite title of the Lanterns. So.
Mine too. Mine absolutely. It's an audio podcast, but I will show that I always keep a Red Lantern ring sitting on my desk to give me inspiration during our podcast.
Nice. I have Dexstar on my desk at work.
I have a Red Lantern ring, and I have a Two Faces coin, a Two Face coin that came with the Dark Knight DVD at Walmart.
Cool.
That's what brings me my inspirato. And Chris has a copy of Jimmy Olsen by Kirby. That's a good inspirato there.
Since we're showing stuff.
That's right. Sure. Yeah, good pod right here. all right, we got one more thing I want to talk about before we get into talk about Trinity War is a controversial decision, a controversial story choice. And I know that this was a story choice that Matt was not a fan of. It was a story choice that was made to make way for something else. Matt's got a quizzical look because he's not positive where I'm going to go with this.
Yeah, I can't remember what you're talking about.
I am going with the retcon at the end of Legion of Superheroes.
Oh,
which establishes that Legion is, it isn't explicit, but it's implied that Legion of Superheroes is the future of Earth 2, not of Prime Earth.
Well, and actually now you're bringing back all of my anger about it. mostly because, I have a few things to say about that. On one hand, that it paved way for Justice League 3000 to be theoretically the future of our Earth. Okay, that actually makes me kind of happy because I enjoy that book quite a bit. That it saddled Earth 2 with a continuity that clearly was being poorly written for really at least 2 years, that actually really bothers me. Not that I don't love those characters, but something happened when they were relaunched in the New 52 and they became terrible. and they weren't right before. So that was pretty controversial. But I think it does perhaps tie into some things that'll be happening. There is something that I do, like I had alluded to earlier in the podcast that I just want to sort of, talk about is for fans of the New 52 or people who want to sort of get that mythology of the New 52, you actually don't have to read that many books. There is a very discreet story weaving through some of the core titles that tell that sort of like X-Files mythology, Black Oil type story for the New 52. And those books, in my opinion, and people fear the two of you, feel free to disagree. Those books are Justice League. The first 6 issues of Justice League of America. The Geoff Johns version of Aquaman, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Forever Evil, and Earth 2. If you read those books, I think that's, what did I say, 6 books? Justice League, Aquaman, Forever Evil, Batman, Superman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Earth 2. Oh, and the first volume of Justice League of America. So it's 7 titles. If you're reading those 7 titles, you are pretty adequately prepared for the big picture of the New 52. Act 1, which ends with Forever Evil number 7.
I think I would take Aquaman out of the list. I think that's...
Oh, great. I got one on his list and none on yours.
Well, the reason I brought... put in Aquaman. Yes, I think Aquaman would have an asterisk. The reason I put in Aquaman is because of Throne of Atlantis, because of some of the things with Black Manta that lead into Forever Evil, but also because that there is a story that will be upcoming in Justice League in Act 2 of the New 52 called The Seven Seas, and that ties into things that happen in Geoff Johns' run in Aquaman. But yes, I would agree you could put an asterisk on Aquaman if you are not so inclined, although Aquaman's a really great book.
Yeah, and I think Superman Wonder Woman is certainly establishing what that relationship means. I'm not 100% sure if I would. I don't know if I would put it in that list either, because I mean, if I think that starts threading out into which family you want to follow. It certainly informing more of what that relationship is, that that heavy lifting of the relationship can't be done in Justice League. There just isn't room. I am struck by how none of the books on your list had Booster Gold in them, which clearly is a flaw.
I would include that one issue of the Justice League International Annual.
See, now I think we can come to some.
That point. One issue
that just
does belong in the. If I had a short box of individual issues, issue would be in there for sure.
If you were making
as
New 52
issue of Stormwatch,
New 52 Starter Omnibus, that right. issue would be in there.
Yes.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. Okay, now we can talk. Yeah.
Right. Well, but you know, I do think that Superman Wonder Woman belongs in there. Because I think that especially given how important that relationship is to everything that has happened and will happen, especially given Booster Gold's warning in that annual, which I believe leads into Future's End. The big beginning show of Act 2 of the New 52. I think that book's pretty important. I think Batman Superman is also pretty important for its Earth 2 elements. Again, you know, Future's End alludes to a war between the Earths. And I think a lot of what we're seeing in Earth 2 and Batman Superman will lead in to actually seeing that war between Earth 1 and Earth 2, not to mention Earth 3, which was featured in Trinity War.
Yeah, and I do think that that list may expand as we get into what Act 2 of the New 52 looks like, because I do think that Batman Superman arc will be important, but also some of what's been in Earth 2, I think, will become much more focused. And you know, we might be talking a year from now about man, that last issue of Legion of Superheroes set up so much of where they were going.
Yeah, I doubt it, but that's a nice thought, Keith.
Maybe that mythical omnibus just includes that one page from Legion of Superheroes, epilogue number 2 from that Legion of Superheroes issue.
Maybe it does. Sort of like those 2 pages from Hawkendove number 5. Should have just sold those 2 pages by themselves.
So we scheduled this episode for this week way back when this was supposed to be the release date of Forever Evil number 7. I think at this point we've said lots, so I think maybe we'll skip talking in depth about Trinity War and Forever Evil, so that we can talk a bit about what's going to be harvested from everything they've been building over these 2.5 years. I think there's been. Let's just talk in general. Trinity War started in July of 2013. As it has been jokingly called, Taking Forever Evil, it started in September. We'll wrap up here in May. Mm-hmm. It's only about 1 month longer than a usual event. Marvel has moved to the, you know, double shipping. Giant events take 3 months, so I think that's some of the perspective of how long this event's taking. I'm trying to imagine Crisis on Infinite Earths, 12 issues monthly. That would horrify people today.
Yeah, right?
It's going to take 11 months, like 1 to 12, to tell this whole tale. I remember when they said Zero Year was going to be like 14, people freaked the heck out. There's no way they would go for 12 issues of Secret Wars now.
Yeah, but if you only have one or two crossover issues a month, that's not that bad. You can still read your core books.
True, and that's, go ahead, Matt.
That is something that they did with Forever Evil that was very, very smart, was they chose certain titles to go along with the series. So it was Justice League of America, which was terrible, Suicide Squad, and a few other little things. I think Teen Titans, maybe. And those all carried along with the story, while other books like Wonder Woman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, they could all still exist before Forever Evil until this summer.
Yeah, we're starting to just now see the books start to reference Forever Evil being over. So far, we've seen Superman, Wonder Woman is now moved past it. The Doomed event will be after.
Yeah, and past Azrael as Wonder Woman.
Yes. Too. Yeah. Cause the latest issue had reference where what was going on. And Wonder Woman, Pandora, of course, came out this week, and it's explicitly after Forever Evil. I imagine all of the dark books will be that, because they've been wrapped up. I think the dark books were the only misstep on taking some books with them. Because they started the big event with Justice League Dark tying in, and they had, all the dark books tied together for one storyline there. But I don't think they had enough for them to do for the length of time that they were wrapped up in it.
It was a 16-part story. It was kind of long.
And about halfway through, it stopped even being about the character that, like, it was called Blight, but about halfway through, it stopped being right. about Blight.
Yeah. It was about something else then.
And that's kind of where I tuned out, is that I think I wasn't big on Blight, and then I started getting intrigued by what they were doing with Nando. Is it Nando Parbat?
Mm-hmm.
Nando Parbat. Where everything happens. Every mystical Project. Thing that happens in the DC universe happens there.
Right.
And I think they might have been better served to have that be two storylines. But that's neither here nor there. So all of those books will be on their newest issue coming out of Forever Evil. So we are starting to get the universe coming into line. 0 Year is done in another month, I think.
33, I think. Yeah.
A couple more months. So
yeah, the first part of the final act came out today.
So I mean, we're almost to having one more or less now, proper now. I called the books that have been pre Forever Evil for this time the universe on pause. It has been an interesting mix of ones that are. Really telling the story they want to tell and having a great time of it, and which ones are kind of biding time until they can get to the new status quo. But it's certainly been an interesting spot as we're kind of starting to see how these books will tile together and what the universe will look like when Forever Evil finishes.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because Jeff Johns, this is really what he describes in interviews as what he was trying to get to that was what was always intended for instance, for the Justice League, was what we will see coming out of Forever Evil. That is his vision for the new 52 Justice League. He just had to sort of get it there. So we see that a little bit with the story of Cyborg. I spent a lot of time complaining the first 6 months, like, why is Cyborg in such a clunky outfit? Well, there was a reason he was in such a clunky outfit, and now he's not, and he looks great. Lex Luthor leading the Justice League was apparently on John's radar from issue one of Justice League, always meant to be. So, so it's an interesting thing to see the, you know, where things are going to be going in Act Two, as they put it, which begins right after Forever Evil number 7. You know, and certainly Future's End, the weekly series starting in May on New Comic Book Day or Free Comic Book Day. Certainly that's a big portion of what we'll be seeing. And then whatever spins out in October as that weekly series as well is going to be a big deal. We've also been seeing announcements of new series, all of which are set after Forever Evil. And all of which, and which, by the way, the newest series officially puts DC back at 52 weekly series this coming July.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. The last announced book, Grayson. No, sorry. The last announced book, Booster Gold, perhaps. Almost announced. That almost puts us back.
It won't be. Will it be a July? Was it rumored to be July?
Sorry, it's September.
September, yeah.
Yeah. But Grayson, the Nightwing reboot, Booster Gold, Teen Titans, New Suicide Squad, and Star Spangled Stories, War Stories. Those all bring the numbers back up.
If they're only calling it New Suicide Squad, can it be the All Teen Titans?
The All Teen Titans.
There's only
five of them.
that's all.
Which, by the way, is also another trend that's very interesting to me coming out of Forever Evil, is that now we have a lot of these titles sort of rejiggered and teams rejiggered. A lot of the teams, not all, certainly not Justice League, unfortunately, but most of the other teams are showing 50-50 male-female casts almost across the board. We're seeing that with, I believe, Justice League Dark. We're seeing that definitely with Justice League United. Stormwatch, the last issue, has reconfigured the team, which will be appearing in Future's End. They're 50-50. There's another one, too, that's relaunching that's exactly 50-50. Male-female, which I think is a really interesting move.
Suicide Squad. If the team we've seen on Suicide Squad's cover is the team, we're not sure yet.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's captured and who's on the team quite yet. But yeah, I forget what the other one is. Teen Titans is almost there. It's 3-2 with one of the three men is gay, which was nice. So it's a really interesting phenomenon. I'm not sure that that's something they intended from the very beginning, but it's certainly nice to see. Oh, the others. Aquaman and the others.
Oh, that's right.
Is a 50-50 team, which is really nice. The others also, an original New 52 creation that now have their own series, although headlined by Aquaman.
Yeah, but they have the curse of the Aquaman. Spinning out of Aquaman is never a good sideline.
There's never been a book spin out of Aquaman. What are you talking about?
Oh, so, didn't Aqualad have a book at one time? Come on.
I think Tempest had a miniseries.
It's gorgeous, by the way. No, Aquaman's never spun out an ongoing title. So this is whole new territory.
That's the New 52 is all about. It's all new. You can even have a book spin off out of Aquaman.
That's right.
Aquaman and the Others, written by Dan Jurgens, creator of Booster Gold. Look at that, 2 degrees of Booster Gold.
Yeah. And I really like it.
I quite enjoyed the first issue. Yeah, I really enjoyed the first issue. I am trying to find an entry point to Superboy because I have a feeling that what's happening in Superboy is going to be more important than people are seeing it right now. I'm not sure where they're going with this character, but I don't know. This may be one that I read summaries off the internet as opposed to reading the book, though.
I would kind of recommend that, yeah.
And we're getting Doomed is just starting. The the Doomsday crossover, which very intriguing. And it's funny that it's, you know, it's funny the what people bring to a concept, because the very first interview about Doomed, they were so clear, we're not retelling Death of Superman. And then my Twitter feed is full of, hey, they're retelling Death of Superman. I don't want them to do that. Well, it's your luck. They're not doing that. So I'm intrigued where they're going with this. It was funny that it also really made me think of something that Mo said when one of our founding hosts, Mo, said when he reviewed Superman Wonder Woman number one, was you shouldn't put Doomsday in a book as just a throwaway villain. And it turns out that they were putting him in that book to establish the character so that a couple of months they could do a giant event with him. So I think it's if we've learned one thing from the New 52, it's that there are very few accidents. Things that you think are poor choices are planned for some reason. Right. And there aren't a lot of just thrown in just for kicks bits along the way.
I can't wait to see where the Ray and Human Bomb show up again.
Never know.
Well, their limited series weren't exactly stellar.
No. But do keep in mind, I mean, you don't know, actually, because look at the cast that we've seen for Future's End, other than Batman Beyond, who's obviously a big headliner, and Booster Gold. But they're all characters that were in series that got canceled, including Booster Gold. they're Stormwatch.
Booster Gold can get a book canceled like nobody's business. He's right. Excellent at it.
Yeah. Stormwatch, Grifter, Amethyst, Frankenstein. All of these were headlining characters.
Terrific.
There's Hawkman I see in there too. Poor Lois Lane. Red Robin, Firestorm, Mr. Terrific. So yeah, lots of characters that had their own series that didn't work out. Well, they're not lost forever. Omac.
Talking about that teaser image for Future's End that came out just this week. Do you think that is Red Robin? Do you think that's Tim Drake in the Robin costume?
Yeah, they've said it's Tim Drake.
Oh, have they?
Oh. Yeah.
Well, interesting. Interesting to happen that he would eventually become Robin, not back as Robin.
Maybe if that's Tim Drake.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right. Well, that character in the picture may not be Tim Drake, but Tim Drake is in the series.
All right.
But it probably is.
And there's a couple of mystery characters on there that I don't know who they are, and we're seeing some Stormwatch in there, and. Yeah, so it'll be it's interesting just where this is all leading, and just in a few weeks we'll get the end of Forever Evil, and by that point we'll have about a half dozen books that are talking about, man, that Forever Evil, that was a rough time.
Right. Well, and you know, New 52 Futures End number 0 comes out on Free Comic Book Day, the first Saturday of May. And there will be a review on Comicosity that morning.
Oh, fantastic. That is, I cannot wait to read the book or the review. We're also seeing one of the big Forever Evil launches is only a week away. Much anticipated by all three of us, Justice League Unlimited. We'll kick off just next week.
With the Justice League Canada story.
That's right.
Yeah, bringing them home.
And you know, our a little bit of news... that maybe some of our your list, I should say our your listeners, they're not here for me, may not be aware that there is a special Justice League Canada cover that comic book shops can order for the issue. So you finally get your Canada cover.
Oh, fantastic. I did not know that.
All those Justice League of America covers with the 50 states.
We didn't get we didn't get one for each province, but you know.
Okay. No, sorry. Okay. Got to take your wins where you can get them.
I don't know if it was cost effective to do one for Prince Edward Island.
I'd buy it.
Yeah, there'd be the completest that need all ten provinces. But
the Yukon cover would be awesome. Although it's the territory, but no.
Well, yeah, I mean, to make bank, you need to do the three territories as well. So I'm trying to imagine, you know, PEI 125,000 people.
Oh, come on! I know the
two.
Those guys are crazy. They'll buy anything.
Both comic stores could go big on copies. But yeah, two comic stores. Used to shop at one, and I went to high school with the guy that runs the other one. That's how big that community is.
Nice.
I haven't lived there in over 20 years. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. This is I think we hit some highlights of New 52. Certainly there was much more that we could have talked about, and we'll talk about it in the future. Looking forward to Future's End, and what's ahead in the New 52. Before we do our farewells, I want to plug. I want to ask one last question. So when's it rebooting, and when's it going to go back to the old universe?
It's not.
No, I don't see it.
When I went to San Diego Comic Con in 2012, it was the moment where I became 100% invested with the New 52. It was because my concern, my grumble at the beginning was always, you know, there is a natural entropy to continuity that it just continues to get more complicated.
Sure.
And, you know, even something like the Ultimate Universe is now impenetrable. It's just, and, you know, 1,000 comics in a year. It just leads to complication no matter what. And, so at the New 52 panel at San Diego, someone asked exactly that question. Won't this eventually have to be rebooted the same as everything else? And Jeff John said, yeah, but that'll be someone else's problem.
Right. I didn't say it wouldn't be rebooted someday.
No,
I said it won't go back to the old universe.
And I agree. I think it's as likely to go back to, I think it's as likely to go back to August of 2011 as it is to go back to August of 1984.
August of 1956, for that matter.
Right. Yeah, the reboot that no one ever remembers, that the Silver Age itself was a reboot.
Yep.
And bless it for being it. But possibly pretty much the hardest reboot that's been done was the one no one counts.
It's not going back. And I do, it's so funny because every time online I see somebody who still thinks there's a chance, not a hope, mind you, hope is a different story, but a chance, a real chance that it would go back to the universe that was left behind. I feel like synapses in my brain just fizzle away, like just little by little, because it's so inconceivable at this point that any publisher would say, oh, you know that story we left off 3 years ago that we haven't published anything about in that time? Let's just pick up from there.
That's right.
I can't wait, because this is going to happen. I can't wait to see which character they bring over from the old continuity.
Oh, well, you mean as a literally a crossover character?
Literally, we go back, we grab, say, maybe a green changeling and move him over to the new continuity.
I hate to tell you, but Beast Boy is going back to being green in a month or two.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. They do fix things occasionally. He is front and center on Teen Titans number one.
But I mean, there are plenty of characters they could. If the new Wally West doesn't quite pan out, we can go back and grab the old continuity, move him in, have some sort of event about it.
That character wasn't working when they rebooted.
Well, and that sort of falls under my new Teen Titans caveat is Wally West's story for me really ended when Mark Waid told his last story. Right after Geoff Johns finished his. After that, there was nothing else to say. It's same thing with Jack Knight and Starman. After that series ended, there's nothing left to say about Jack Knight. You know, the there are just some stories that have to be over at some point. And to me, New Teen Titans was that. And they released games to even prove my point.
And I think that that's one of the, that was one of the interesting parts of the New 52 for me was, it actually gave an ending to so much of my DC comics that, I'm okay with it stopping there. I'm okay with that. It is actually possible for me to have every chapter of Booster Gold's story from his first appearance to Flashpoint. And it is a complete story, except for Extreme Justice, which will never, ever touch my hand.
I've got that.
But the Justice League, you can follow the whole thread of Justice League International. You can follow the whole, I already felt that Superman, that version of Superman had ended. That really that version of Superman runs from Man of Steel to, I want to say Adventures of Superman 600 when they retconned that Birthright was the new origin instead of Man of Steel. That was already a complete story to me. And that's it just gives an ending. And then the character that I the Booster Gold that I read now doesn't feel entirely like the one that was before, but I'm starting fresh on his story.
Sure. Well, and that's how I felt about the Justice League, is after having 100 and whatever members, now we're back to 7. And a few more now, but I get to sort of experience that all over again. And is it going to be the exact same as when I was a kid? No, but it has enough of that feel that it really excites me. It excites me more than picking up the, 12th volume where they've, introduced the 105th member.
I'm rereading Infinite Crisis right now and realizing just how much of a mess the DC was there in the mid.
Although I do love that story.
It's a good story.
The huge hype for me of DC, but what happened after 52 and Justice League of America wrapped up, that I think that's where it fell apart for me, and it just became sort of blah and uninteresting.
All right. Well. Calgary Comic Expo coming up on the weekend of the 24th through 27th of April. Chris and I will both be there. I am hosting on Thursday, the 24th, from 5 till probably 7. We're going to say it's been open-ended for us. We have the room as long as we want it. I'll be hosting, moderating Art Portfolio 101. The special guests will be Scott Kowalczyk and Riley Rosmo. We'll be looking at some very brave young creators will have offered up their work for critique as they develop their own portfolios to try to get work in the comic industry. So that's going to be an interesting one. And Chris will be joining me on Saturday the 26th, 4:45, Palomino Room E, for We Talk Comics Live. This is our first ever live in front of a studio audience episode. We'll be joined by guests Ed Grissom. Is it with an N or an M?
Blank. I think it's an M.
It's late now. Ed will be there. Sons of Anarchy, Ed. Scott Kowalczyk will be there. Riley Rosmo. And Ben Rankel, good friend of the show, will be joining us. Brett will also be on that one. Brett has a panel Sunday morning, the Renegade Press panel. So go see that. And I may or may not end up hosting, moderating another panel over the course of the weekend. I'm expected to hear soon. I went from 0 to between 2 to 4 at this point. It's been exponential growth in my moderating of panels at the expo.
You guys are the darlings of Calgary Expo. It's I'm really impressed and jealous and impressed.
it's been an odd journey. I set out the goal of moderating one panel, and I'm going to be spending a goodly chunk of my expo standing in front of the crowd. You'll hear from us one more time before the expo. I think it depends on when day that episode gets up. If we don't get it up in time, Brett won't have time to edit it because he'll be at the darn expo. Chris, say your goodbyes for the night.
All right. If you see us at the expo, be sure to hit us up for some free swag. Our sponsors, Comicosity. Aaron Long has promised us a lot of stuff to give away at the expo that I will be forced to slug around. So hit us up as early as possible so I can give that stuff away. And we've reached a milestone for We Talk Comics. Last reviewed in, I believe, episode 15, Frankenstein Alive, number 3, has come out this week.
Wow.
Chris_ we talk on Twitter.
And nothing more depressing than opening that Frankenstein Alive, number 3, and seeing "to be continued" at the end of the damn thing. That was the biggest letdown of the week for me, was that "to be continued."
That sucks.
Matt, you won't be at the Calgary Expo. What are you doing?
I will not be at the Calgary Expo, although I'll be thinking of you, because you get the luxury of meeting Mr. Greg Rucka. But I will be at C2E2, the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo, or something. But C2E2. So that will be going on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, same weekend. I will be there in full force the entire weekend, and I'm going to give you guys an exclusive. Usually we're the ones on Comicosity getting the exclusives, but I'm giving it to We Talk Comics. Comicosity is holding a raffle at C2E2 for a number of really awesome prizes. And that raffle will be located at Graham Cracker Comics, a local Chicago chain, their back issue area, not their trade area, but their back issue area. They have two areas. That's how awesome they are. We'll be holding a raffle for a number of DC and Vertigo prizes. There's a few hardcovers in there, really nice thick Green Lantern one. Bunches of Vertigo books, lots of nice starter packs for a lot of new Vertigo series. But the grand prize, which I suspect a lot of people will be very interested in, and I hope we get a lot of entries, is for all 52 September event Villains Month 3D covers for the DC books. All 52 3D covers, lenticulars, all in pristine condition, already unread, ready for you, grand prize. So please put in your raffle submission. There'll be a nice table. Take a card so you remember Comicosity. Enter, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you. I will be all over the show. I also encourage people to try to find me. My Twitter handle is Photocub, FOTOCUB. So you can definitely locate me through there. I will be online the entire time I'm there, but I will also be carrying 5 hardcovers to hand out to the first 5 people that come up to me and say that they love Comicosity. So the first 5 people to do that, and you don't have to do a dance or anything like that, although I would certainly appreciate that.
Can I phone it in? I'm not going to be in Chicago.
No,
you sound can't. So good. I'm canceling it out on Calgary.
Right. So, so grab me and I'll hand you a hardcover if you're one of the first 5. And please do find me quickly because they're going to be heavy. These are not trades. These are hardcovers. I'm going to be there trying to talk to as many creators as possible to get as many interviews up on the site in the week following. I might try to cover a few panels. I'll do my best, but really, we just want to meet and greet and talk to as many fans as possible. I do want to give one more shout out for Comicosity. We just in our I am not the techie guy. You may know this at Comicosity. That is my partner, Aaron Long, founder. But he has managed to switch over our server, and we are now a uber fast, super fast, instantaneous loading site. If you ever came to Comicosity and thought, why is this not loading a little faster? You will never think that again. We have amped our stuff, and we've got so many reviews going up every week, so many previews, lots of DC stuff, lots of Marvel stuff, lots of Archie stuff, if you're an Archie fan, as many are. Lots of great creator interviews, reviews, columns, this podcast, the Hangout video cast, everything. So please check out Comicosity. Please see me at C2E2. And thank you both, guys, for having me on. Yes, you're right. If you had done a New 52 podcast without me, I probably would have stalked you down and made you pay. So.
All right. You can email us at comics@wetalkpodcast.com. And we are OUT.